Earth, sky.
What we've been doing is measuring the distances to a certain kind of star called an R. Lyra variable star. R. Lyra variables are very easy to find in globular clusters, which are a component of our galaxy. We can find them in the Large Magellanic Cloud. Up until our work, though, we had no really good measure of the intrinsic brightness of this kind of star.
You're listening to astronomer Fritz Benedict with the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. How do astronomers know the distances to stars? The only way to measure star distances directly is with what's called parallax. It's really a measurement of angles and the change in our vantage point on a star from one side of Earth's orbit to the other. Using this technique and a very precise instrument aboard the Hubble Space Telescope, Benedict and his team, for the first time, directly measured accurate distances to five variable stars called R.R. Lyrae stars. The most distant one is a star called SU Draconis. It's now the most distant star of this type whose distance is directly measured. This star is 2,300 light years away. He spoke with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar.
Dr. Benedict, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Happy to be here.
So tell us about some of your latest work. It's allowing scientists to understand huge distances in the universe.
Okay. What we've been doing is measuring the distances to a certain kind of star called an R. Lyra variable star. R. Lyra variables are very easy to find in globular clusters, which are a component of our galaxy. We can find them in the Large Magellanic Cloud. Up until our work, though, we had no really good measure of the intrinsic brightness of this kind of star. So with the Hubble Space Telescope, we've actually measured the distances to five of these R. Lyra variables. And basically, parallax is very easy to understand. You just hold a finger up in front of your nose and open and shut your eyes and alternate. You watch your finger bounce back and forth against the background of the wall. And the further away your finger is, the less of a bounce back and forth there is. Instead of your eyes being separated by some centimeters, we use the Earth's orbit, which if you take a picture of the sky with Hubble Space Telescope in January and another picture in June, your eyes are now 186 million miles apart. And so you can actually measure the bounce back and forth of a star, a distant star. So we've concentrated on these 5R Lyra stars. And with them, we have a very good indication now of what the intrinsic brightness of these kinds of stars are. So now, with that knowledge, we can go out to a globular cluster, find dozens of such stars in a globular cluster, compare the brightness of the known brightness with the apparent brightness in the globular cluster, and out pops the distance of the globular cluster. Once you've got the distance of the globular cluster, you get all kinds of more interesting pieces of information, paramount amongst them being the age of the globular cluster. And the hope is that the clusters aren't older than the universe, because other astronomers have been working on, in a cosmological sense, trying to understand and measure the age of the universe. And they know how it used to be. It was like asking a nine-year-old, how old were you? And the nine-year-old would say, well, gee, I'm somewhere between 6 and 10 years old. And that's not a very satisfactory answer. So he can't even count the candles on his own birthday cake. Well, now these cosmologists, they have a number 13.75 billion years old, plus or minus 110 million years. So we're down to one candle uncertainty or less. So we really know what the age of the universe is from that approach. So with this new information that we've come up with, people will be able to calculate the ages of dozens of globular clusters in our galaxy, tell us sort of the average age of our galaxy, which one would hope would be something like 12 or 10 billion years old, and even better than that, maybe find a spread of ages of these globular clusters, and that will give us a hint, a tantalizing hint, as to how the galaxy formed and when it formed, how long ago it formed, and how long that formation process took.
How is our star different than this Lyra star? Help us out here. And also, what does that have to do with these globular clusters? Explain a little bit more of this for us, please.
Sure. Our sun is a nice, normal, average star in the middle of its lifetime. And our Lyra star is a star that has consumed all of its hydrogen in its core, and it's consumed most of the helium in its core. And so it's now it's burning carbon in its core, so it's a giant star, and it varies in brightness. It varies in brightness because there's now a layer of helium around the carbon core, and ionized helium, it turns out, does not transmit light or energy very well. And so the outer layer of the star gets pushed out. But as a gas is pushed out and expands, it cools, and now the helium can attract the electron back. It becomes neutral helium. All of a sudden, the light and energy can escape, and so that layer collapses down again. So the star is like it's breathing in and out, and it changes its brightness as it breathes in and out from this process. And that's like an Eat at Joe's sign, right? You have an advertisement, look down the street, and you say, wow, look at that sign, it's blinking. So those are kinds of stars that are really easy to find in globular clusters. And if you can find them, then you can measure their brightness. And so they're stars much different than the sun because they're evolved stars. Now, probably our sun won't become one of these because our sun's not massive enough. These stars are probably 2-3 times more massive than the sun. But it's still at the end stage of stellar evolution. These are really old stars, and so they were formed a long time ago, close to the beginning of the formation of our galaxy.
This is my final question. I just want to do a wrapping up
question.
Dr. Benedict, what's the most important thing you want people today to know about using stars to measure huge distances in the universe?
The most important thing is the public support that we get, because without the public support, none of this work could take place. Frankly, none of these results are going to make any difference to somebody buying groceries tomorrow morning or going out and having a drink tonight at their local bar. But to know how big the universe is, to know how old the universe is, all of these things are part of our culture. It's part of the fact that you're a human being and you have curiosity. And all of us astronomers thank every taxpayer in this country for supporting us. And the Hubble Space Telescope has been very good for helping develop that support. But without that support, none of this work could happen.
Well, great. Well, thank you for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Fritz Benedict, a senior research scientist at the University of Texas McDonald Observatory. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.